Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so I'm back again today with Dr. Deborah Dunn, who was on our previous podcast with Dr. Sherilyn Jordan. And we just had so much to talk about and so much to say that we ran way too long. And so now we're reconvening to continue the same conversation we had started in the last episode about trauma, including vicarious trauma and compassion fatigue. And so I just wanted to make sure we had enough time to talk to Deborah, as she's known to me, to talk through some of the sort of client-facing side of how trauma works and what advocates and representatives can do when they're working with a client who presents with symptoms that are consistent with PTSD and what we can do for ourselves. So that was sort of where we left off the conversation about how when we are not in an optimal place ourselves as representatives, then it really does not set the right stage for our client to be able to engage in a trauma-informed kind of conversation, which we would need them to be in order to be able to truly represent their best interests.
Yeah.
Good. So really, there's no specific place I want to start, but really, I don't know if you just want to kind of to just kick it off with some of the lingering thoughts that came out after the last episode, and we can just dialogue from there.
Yeah, no, I have an idea about where to start that I think could be helpful. I just want to apologize at the start, at the outset, that I don't have slides. It probably would be good to be able to have slides, but I'll try to give you as much of a help to visualize what I'm talking about with metaphor. And anyway, just want to say that at the outset. So, in particular, starting with one of the slides in Sherilyn's wonderful presentation early on, was a slide of concentric circles. And in the center, and she was making the point that trauma isn't just like this event in the world, and it's not just something that happens in an isolated brain and nervous system, but that it happens contextually, so that there's the context of the individual psychology of a person and their neurophysiology. Then there's the next circle was the relational and interpersonal context. And then the broadest one she was saying is sociocultural, and I would add, as she would, I'm sure, political. Larger context. And there are many circles. There are lots of different things that can be added, but that's a good sense of that trauma happens in context. And that's super important for pretty much everything we're going to talk about because in terms of how to help practitioners and how practitioners can help their clients. And the reason is that trauma, even the most horrific things that people can experience, it doesn't mean that they will experience trauma. There's more ingredients. All right. Also, even seemingly very mild events in the world can precipitate tremendous PTSD response. The reason why is that the other ingredients that are in place are what else is going on in that person at the moment of that event? What do they got going for them? And what do they maybe have that's going to be compromising them just within them and then in potential circles of support or lack of support or actual harm and more distress, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's intuitive in a way that sometimes we can see that something, you know, if we were to compare all of the incidents in our lives, something that you would think would be more impactful if you're really well oriented or doing whatever in a good place. Otherwise, you are more, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but like you're able to withstand more.
Resilient.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
Exactly. And it can be really puzzling. Like there can be, for example, with someone whose nervous system is really has a whole history of trauma that's been not metabolized and not processed, but they're kind of going through their life. They can, for example, be in a car accident with the slightest whiplash, like the person behind them was going 5 kilometers an hour. And they have a massive PTSD response. And ICBC says around credibility.
Low velocity accident, yeah.
Like, don't believe you. You're making assembly, which is what, you know, one of the things that, especially you and Sherilyn were talking about after I left, this idea of credibility, right? How do you, if you just look at the event, it may not seem credible. And also what you went on to talk about, you and Sherilyn, about the conditions that people would be going back to in their countries of origin. Like if you can establish, I didn't know this, but if you can, it sounded like if you can establish that those conditions are ripe for engendering trauma, that's a really important piece, not just establishing what this person's been going through.
Oh no.
What are the conditions? What are those concentric circles looking, right?
For sure. In fact, having the original trauma is not in itself a successful refugee claim. It's what's going to happen to you in a forward-looking sense. So yeah, it is entirely relevant.
That's great. Huh. And so a lot has to do with, I mean, if you think about, it can be useful to think about the nervous system as a container. And this gets right away to the question about practitioners. Huh. The nervous system is a container. And it gets filled with situations of, I mean, what consumed with in any given moment, what's going on? And am I meeting whatever, say, challenge in a functional way? And to any extent that there's not that, I mentioned when in the first recording, there's this arc of when a challenge, when we're activated, there's a sense of threat. It doesn't have to be dire. It can be like, I'm late for the bus. Right. But when there's any charge in the nervous system, we need to go through meeting that challenge, hopefully successfully, so we can end up down regulating back to a baseline of okayness. Right. So to the extent to which that doesn't happen, this charge that remains in the system, it's held. If there's trauma that happens, meaning there's something that happened that we couldn't resolve that was deeply threatening, and we couldn't complete that arc, and we stay in a kind of a place of stuckness, that there's not the resolution, and we can fluctuate, as Sherilyn described so beautifully, between states of dysregulation of hyperarousal. There can be a perennial sense of avoiding the things that remind us of the distress. And there can be dissociation. There could be a lot of things that characterize that stuckness, right? So the extent to which the container gets filled means that people are headed towards a trauma response from compromising situations that may or may be mild, maybe small, maybe horrific, maybe different sizes, but the container's too full. Uh-huh. If the container's full and there's all this unmetabolized stress and distress and stuckness, we just get tipped over. Uh-huh. And that's what's really relevant to you practitioners. The vital importance of taking really good care of yourselves so that your container of your nervous system is abundant and spacious and emptied, so that you live in the zone of okayness and you maintain that, and a commitment to maintaining that, mostly for your own well-being, because there's nothing more important than you. And then you're also dedicated to this work, so you also want to have an empty-ish container for your clients. Uh-huh. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we talked about resiliency, and I think that there's a concept on the other side of it. We in the legal field talk about like the fragile skull. Like if you're in a high velocity or in an accident and you hit somebody who has a fragile bone system, so that it has an impact that is severe regardless of that, you need, like, the legal system needs to treat them where they are, you know? And so I think that when you recognize that as advocates, we do have some control over whether or not we are susceptible or resilient. And that actually is quite empowering in terms of doing the work, to note that the container can be, I don't know if the container gets grown or our ability to keep emptying it can be regulated, but that we do have tools.
That's right. The big piece is to take out the garbage, to empty the container, to make sure that we have the space to be able to deal with our own challenges and the challenges of sitting with someone who is vibrating with the stuckness of unmetabolized trauma. And also on top of that, the stress of this situation where their entire future rests on the outcome of their claim, right? Just not safeness there either. They're not in a place of a landed okayness by any stretch, right? So I'm just gonna look down. And
sure, of course.
Okay, thank you. One of the missing resources in trauma is the lack of time. So, and you mentioned that after I left, that this sense of the bind that people are in around it, the lack of time to be with someone because resources are slender, but to introduce time as part of the experience of being with you, not rushed, is a resource that counters the experience of trauma where there is no time. Many traumatic responses could be avoided. Events don't have to be traumatizing if there were just more time. And people will say that, God, if I just had a second to see before, right? Or time to get away.
Yeah. Anyway, and in the refugee process, it's not just about resources. It's about actual deadlines arising, and you have to get your story in front of them. And if you delay, then that might be taken as an adverse inference about the seriousness of the risk. Or you might be at risk of removal, so it's like everybody's that pushing. It's a state that is very ever present. And until you make your claim, you can't get access to healthcare, you can't get access to the labor market. And so this sense of rushy, it's important to emphasize all of the negative impacts that can have.
Yes, it's really important. And in this moment, I'm just grateful for the time to look at my notes because I don't want to miss, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot about how to keep your container in an okay place is about, and making sure that the energy doesn't get built up, is to offset what you're encountering in your daily work with resources like, how do I have more balance? How do I have balance in my life? Am I making sure that I'm nourishing different aspects of who I am and experiencing something more than work and distraction and work and distraction, but living your life so that there's balance, so that you're having more of life than work. Things that are delightful, things like exercise, Sherilyn mentioned, so that you are, the way I think, one way to think about it is sort of neurophysiologically, which is to think about what kind of bath do you want to live in? Do you want a bath of dopamine and reward and opiates and warmth and serotonin and soothing? Do you want to live in that bath? Because to do that, you need to have experiences of having activities that give you a sense of accomplishment and warm connections with other people, right? And love and connection and being in nature.
Totally. Yeah, all of that.
All of that. You mentioned forest bathing, the chemicals that the forest can give you, right?
For sure.
Yoga brings you all these things to make sure that the bath that you're not living in is filled with cortisol and adrenaline and neurotransmitters that are all about alarm and danger. So it's important to offset.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes, and I know this just from talking to other practitioners, is sometimes as a species, we get into this kind of pattern of like, well, when you're sitting in, day out, hearing trauma narrative and encountering traumatized people, you start to feel like guilty about seeking that joy and that cortisol. How can I be doing this? How can I go on holidays when, you know, my clients don't have those privileges? And so it ends up becoming kind of like an exercise in depravity, you know, in terms of self-deprivation, you know, because that feels like that's how you recognize the sacrifices that your clients have made, sometimes inadvertently or without any alternative. But yeah, I think it gets really hard sometimes to kind of keep remembering that that's actually something that is a must. It's not a nice to have.
Exactly. It's essential. It's like you've all heard this a million times. You have to put the oxygen mask on you first, or you are useless to the person, especially, you know, a compromised person or a little person, if it's a child next to you. You have to, and it's really helpful, I think, and good support in relation to this. It's really part of your job to take care of you and to do your job well. Because I'll say a little bit more about that when we get to how to help the client. But first things first, this is your oxygen mask around support to really know that to keep your nervous system container supple and flexible and empty enough-ish to be able to function well, these are parts of the ingredients to have balance in your life.
Something that I've always noticed is that when my client is worried about me, and they often can be, when they see how much I'm struck by their story, it causes them to be unable to share because they're worried about the harm they're perpetrating on me by sharing. I don't think you do it for this reason. You don't seek joy because it will make you be a better lawyer. You seek joy because that makes you a better human and a happier person. But it just so happens that if you don't do it, you're also going to create a barrier that will prevent your client from being able to openly share with you. And we talked about that a little bit, but that's sort of just been my experience.
Yeah. And that kind of, I can jump ahead a little bit around, because this is a important relationship, which is what we're talking about, between how you are treating yourself and what you're reaching for, good things for yourself, and then what you can supply your client with. And so to address this, the client is maybe closing down in a way or protecting you by not sharing or trying to buffer or, you know, maybe minimize. The more of a sense that you can, I think, verbally address that, like name it. You know, you may be concerned that you're compromising me. You may be concerned that this would be hard for me to deal with. And I'll tell you, I know that what you've been through is really difficult, and I am not going to pretend that I'm not moved by that. But my job is to move into a zone of or gear of just using that information with all the fullness of it to advantage for our moving forward with this case. So I'm okay. I've heard it all. It's okay. I just want to name that in case that's what's going on, right?
Yeah, that's excellent. Even just like, it's my great honor to be able to provide this assistance. Like, I love this type of work. You know, this is like, and so that it's not, they don't see stop signs everywhere, and you know, exactly. They see an invitation, a truly open invitation without a fear of doing harm.
That's right. That's great. And the other thing, just to, I'll come back to this probably later, but to say it now, because it's a really big one, is I was highlighting in the first, you know, recording, this other branch of the nervous system. So there's the autonomic nervous system. The sympathetic branch is responsible for mobilizing us against threat. You know, all those Fs, fight, flight, freeze, fawning, feigning death, fragmentation, right? Mobilizing, tremendous energy. And the other is the parasympathetic nervous system, which is meant to, once we register that we're okay, to down-regulate into okayness. And it has a lot of other functions too. But another branch of the parasympathetic nervous system is this vagus system. Okay. And I talked about dorsal vagal being if fight, flight, freeze, fawn, feign, death doesn't, that all the way up to feigning death doesn't work, we can move into this dorsal vagal response, which is preparation for death, which is a kind of a deep collapse, a withdrawal from everything. And that's hypoarousal, right? Is after hyper, we move into hypo. So if your client, and you're just bringing some example of a kind of a sympathetic arousal around, geez, I'm concerned, I'm worried that I'm compromising you. And I just gave you some suggestion about how to meet that. If someone's in a dorsal place, a given up place, one of the things, I think the central thing to bring up in this naming it way is to say to the client, you know, sometimes people can be really uncomfortable with sharing what happened to them or what they did at the time. And they are uncomfortable because they think they're bad. They think it makes them bad or deficient or unworthy. And it can make it really hard to speak then, because you could be really scared that I might reject you. I might be disgusted. I might just have nothing to do with you. And I want you to know that there is nothing you can say which makes me want to go away or stop helping you. It may be really hard to take that in. But just to help with that a little bit, here's what's so interesting. Actually, in this environment, the more difficult the story is, the more compromised you've been, the more you'll be accepted. Actually, it's the opposite of rejection. This is what's going to get you, hopefully, through the door. So no matter, you may be feeling badly about yourself. You may be worried that I won't have anything to do with you. But actually, it's really important to try to let that flow. What happened to you? What it's like at home. That's so it's backwards that way. So that's meant to help them with a very big barrier in that dorsal state is shame.
I actually think I don't think I had put it in this way. I hadn't heard it articulated quite so clearly, but I know that on occasion when I have spoken to clients, just saying like, just so you know, I believe you. You know, and that when, because we have to prepare clients for scrutiny and disbelief and credibility concerns, that I think that sometimes we don't realize that we might even be projecting that outward, that like when I'm asking, so did you really, like, that doesn't, you know, like, because we've got the immigration officer or the RPD member in our head, so we're trying to prepare them for that, but in the process to be like, I just want to be 100% clear, I believe you. And, you know, and you said this too, like there's no number of times, there's no too many times you can say that for a client where it's like, I 100% believe you. This is what I'm concerned about just because of my experience seeing other things. I know that there's a perfectly logical explanation. Let's just try and tease that one out, you know?
Nice. And no matter what you say, my sense of who you are as this incredibly brave and courageous and strong person. You got to hear, you are a strong person. I believe in you. I am honored to work with you. There's nothing you can say that's going to change that.
This is a really good segue actually for me, because sometimes I'll even find that when somebody comes through, something about their story just doesn't come off right. And sometimes it's because they've been told that this is going to work better than that. And so even if you tell me right now that everything I've told you up to this point is not correct, but there is still a story, I still, like, I'm not going to lose patience with you. I'm not going to kick you out the door. I understand that if you're here, it's because of this, and that's what I want to hear. And so, you know, I think it can get tricky.
Yes, I didn't know about that. That's really important. And again, naming the possibility, naming what might be going on will create a path for them to, okay, I'll join you. Okay, I feel this safeness of you. And to encourage them to, this will go a whole lot better. The more authentic, because people can have and they won't know about the reference to spidey sense, but in a gut sense, when it's off, I have it right now. I'll just tell you, I could be wrong. I have this sort of gut sense that there might be something that's harder to say, or that you think might not be as potent. Or
that you're giving me something that you think I want to hear. But just so you know, I don't have that predetermined expectation. Yeah.
Nice. Beautiful. Yeah. Sounds like you're doing great stuff. That's great. Well, I already knew that.
I learned from the best. Yeah.
So I'm going to look down again. Right. So, because we jumped ahead a little bit. That's great. So yes, around taking care of you, the practitioners, this idea of balance, but actually the kind of precondition for balance, although you can have a commitment to having a balanced life in any case, but especially given the work you're doing, it's really important to be having a relationship with your interior, to be self-aware, what's going to check in, to drop in, how am I doing? Am I jacked up? Am I feeling kind of drifty and floaty and foggy? Am I feeling depressed and despairing? Am I feeling like withdrawing? Like, to just check, how's my nervous system? Because I said last time, spoiler alert, we all have a nervous system. We all have a container and it's got whatever it's got in it, right? So to check in, because then we can be responsive to what's there. Oh, I need some soothing. Oh, I need a time in the forest. Oh, I need yoga would be a good idea today. Uh-huh. Some of that progressive muscle relaxation, or breathing, even for 10 minutes.
Right? I really love this. I mean, I don't know I mean, I've never actually had this conversation, but I would venture a guess that everybody who's worked in this area has had a moment where their client is talking to them and they're not there anymore. You know, you realize that you yourself, and I have my own specific response. I lose sensation in my fingers, you know, like it could be my face, you know, and I don't think any two people have the same response, but when I can feel mine happening, and I'm now, because of the work we've done together, I'm much better at checking in. I'm like, huh, it's funny. I think I'm in an interview, but you know, then I'm like, okay, what do we need? We need a break. 100% we need a break, or I need to have a drink of water, or like all those things that Sherilyn was describing as things that you can use for your client. Yeah. I'm also part of this relationship, and I need to attend to that, because if I'm off out, my client probably knows too. They're probably also having this spidey sense. And so, you know, yeah. Relationally, I've created a compromised situation unless I attend to that.
It's beautiful, beautiful, Deanna. And I wasn't even actually thinking when I was speaking about you being with the client. I mean, just like in your day, am I checking in? Like even on a Saturday, right? Am I with me? Because then you can respond and you're taking care of you and your nervous system can be more calm in that sense of okayness, because you're taking care. I mean, the difference between a child who's neglected and a child who's supplied with what they need is night and day, mm-hmm. right? So we need to look after ourselves. So for awareness, sure. And then balance. And then the third one is connection. And here's a big, big piece for both you all practitioners and for the everything that I'll say about contact, more about the contact with the client. Because I just was reviewing how there's the autonomic nervous system, sympathetic branch, the parasympathetic branch, and the vagus system, which has the dorsal branch, which is when the sympathetic route doesn't get us to safeness and safety, the brain can move into this dorsal giving up collapse, what could be called feigned death. But the other branch of the vagus system is the yummy branch. It's ventral vagus, part of that vagus system. And the ventral is responsible for social connection. It has inserts into the eyes, throat, the heart, and the belly. And the diaphragm. And it's a beautiful story because the vagus system developed in mammals. Other animals don't have it. And it's a sophisticated way of getting to safety and safeness in the way of, you know, having social connection can make people physically safer. But also help them complete the arc. Because even if you fight, flight, or freeze, you gotta get back to okayness. Your thinking brain can come back online, your cortex is available, you can solve problems again, and you can feel deeply okay and sense of safety and safeness in interconnection, in just life, right? And so mammals developed a capacity to downregulate in social connection. So being able to, for you all, to talk about your work, this came up hugely in your Compassion Fatigue podcast. And you all, it was so lovely. You amazing women, by the way, you're all amazing. You just blew me away. But just to talking about, we should talk, you know, we should do this. We should really debrief. Mm-hmm. And that goes along with this, of, especially for first responders, that idea of critical incident stress debriefing is it's really important to get in circulation what you just went through or what you're going through, because it helps kick in the ventral vagus system to help down-regulate your body into a sense of well-being. And so think about it. Inserts into the eyes, eye gaze, and eye contact, not texting for for crying out loud, right? right? And also voice, and how important it is to be met with soothing or a sense of confidence and strength, with heart, like literally heart that's regulated, and also metaphorically warmth and care. So what Sherilyn said straight up about what her Rainbow Refugee Organization offers is heart warmth, caring and soothing, welcoming environment. This is ventral vagal stuff. And diaphragm, the breath, as a huge resource. So you all need connection so that you're optimally living, as we all optimally live, with the ventral vagal nervous system at play all the time. That's what we want. That's the baseline. We always want to be there. And we want to enhance pathways to get there. If we've gotten away, if we're in sympathetic arousal, if we've fallen into dorsal vagal, we need to get back to ventral vagal connection, right? And that has everything to do with debriefing and sharing. There's a book that I never read, but I always referenced. It's called Why Zebras Don't Have Ulcers. It's because you're on the savannah and you're a zebra and the lion's chasing you and it's really bad, but somehow you make it. I don't know, the lion trips, gets bored, whatever. And you go back to the herd and you shake and you vibrate and the other ones are surrounding you because you're mammals and they're helping you shake in this field of protection and care and nurturance. And then you're okay. You know, what's for lunch, you know? Kind of thing. Digestion goes back online and all the, you know, heart and lungs and all of that down regulates to okayness. We are mammals too, and we need that, right?
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Yeah.
Well, you said so much in here.
It's a lot. I'm sorry.
It's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And I just want to kind of quickly trace through some of the things that you've said, because, you know, you said, first of all, the thing about how, you know, you must do this in life first. And yes. So we were talking about the kind of mind blindness. And I think that, you know, part of the thing, and it's been like years and years of counseling and treatment before I'm sort of understanding how, because I don't think every person has like a direct contact between their brain and how their body or how their nervous system is doing. And so it took me quite a number of years to actually learn how to hear those signals and be like, oh, okay, I'm not in a good place. And then to figure out what helps, you know, because I don't think any two people are the same. I mentioned it on the last podcast. For some reason, for me, peppermint oil is like a magical elixir that kind of gets me back into my kind of present state very, very well. Debriefing, you said this, is just so important. And it's so often lacking in our field because most of us are not either sole practitioners or we're working with other people who are doing different types of law. people don't really want to hear about your refugee practice in, you know, their downtime, unless they're other practitioners. Like, you know, your spouse doesn't want to necessarily hear about the information that you've taken in, but it does, it's necessary for the digestion process, I guess. Yeah. You know, I think with COVID, we became even more isolated from one another. And I think that kind of stuck as a habit for so many people. And we're only just now realizing how to reconnect and how beneficial that is. There are other things. You talked about the throat singing for me for some reason. I don't want anyone else to hear it. But when I'm by myself, like being able to like let that noise come out, it's incredibly healing. Movement of any kind, whether it's yoga or just like dancing like a lunatic around my my living room, you know.
Great.
Anyways, there's so many there. But I like the way you've taken us through that.
Oh, beautiful. And singing, by the way, exercises the diaphragm. And the diaphragm, when it's stimulated, this is why it's so important. Well, I'll finish one sentence at a time. Diaphragm, it stimulates the vagus, the ventral vagus system. So, and that's why, and this starts to come over into how to be with clients, because this is all taking care of you guys. And you take care of yourselves and reaching out to have a community of care as best as you can, you know, make that happen. To teach yourself and your clients the difference between, and Sherilyn, I'm sure said this, high, short and shallow breathing up here, it stimulates sympathetic arousal, and low belly. So I don't know if you can see it, like, so if you put your hand on your chest and your other hand on your belly, and you can breathe in and see, is this hand moving up and down? Is the belly hand moving up and down? And for most people, honestly, oh, that's what moves up and down. And training yourself, inviting yourself, and inviting your client to try to expand their belly stimulates a great resource, stimulates the vagus response of okayness and well-being. And so singing, especially if you know you use your diaphragm to inhale, it's beautiful. And movement takes you out of whatever freeze might be in the system. You might be in a semi-frozen state where you're not even aware of it. Movement gives you a chance to counter, to an antidote to that sense of freeze, right?
You talked about zebra shaking, but
oh, I can't hear you.
Sorry, I just realized I'm on mute. You talked about how zebras shake. It's because somebody's drilling in the office next to me, obviously. But good timing. But shaking, even in itself, you know, it doesn't have to be organized movement. But I sometimes have found that shaking is really effective. These things, I mean, to me, it always felt kind of like woo-woo to be talking about all this stuff. But these ancient wisdoms, they're real, like filling your belly. I do it 10 times in a row, full belly and then out of the mouth. And I find it's magic for real. And, you know, people talk about pranayama and all that. I find it makes me do too much of this and not enough of the belly breath. It's not enough time. But like, I just think that there's, you know, you can find your own thing, but these things have like a truly almost immediate medicinal effect if you're finding the right fit.
Beautiful. That's great. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know I'm a cyclist and there are so many close calls on any given week. I mean, it's a number of really close calls. And I scream after, like I just really discharge out the fight that I couldn't go in. Like I dodged something, but you know, expletives, man, at volume. And it's so, so great. And then I'm clear. Then I'm okay. That I discharge the energy. It's not going to stay in my container, man. You know? So even that, even raging against the machine, you know,
I love that.
It's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to glance down again.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I think also you talked about warmth. To me, that's why dogs have become like everyone's talisman for care, because, you know, when I just hold my warm, heavy dog, or she lies her entire weight on top of me, again, that's another one of my fast pathways to healing.
Straight, because there's this two hearts beating and breathing together and closeness and maybe eye gaze. Mm-hmm. A lot going on there.
When I hear her do that, then I find that I do it myself. And it's always, I just wait. It's never too many breath cycles before she gives a big exhale.
That's beautiful. And it's also a great segue to considered input about time with the client. Cause I mean, I'm looking at the clock. I can't believe. Where to start? So the most significant thing you can do is be in good shape. Why? Because way below any capacity to think, deep in the brain, just the social engagement system is constantly surveillance around, is there threat? Are we safe? It's always on. The what's called the neuroception of danger, the neuroception of the picking up of not okayness happens in response to all kinds of subtle things, like not what someone's saying, because this part of the brain does not care about talk. It cares about the tone of voice. It cares about, do you look scared? Do you look angry? And it responds like that, going into potentially arousal, sympathetic arousal, if it detects any sense of danger, including how's the client experiencing you. So this is really important for you to take care of you, because you matter. But here's where the rubber hits the road around your okayness is going to really affect your client. And you named it earlier, right? So the client and the client is, in addition to having that background sense of, is this environment of the space that you're meeting in, does it exude a sense of safeness and welcoming? Are you, with your nervous system, in a good place, exuding that sense, providing that neuroception of safeness, right? These are huge, probably the most important thing.
Even in the hearing room, it's there. If you're in the hearing room and you're super worried about the outcome and your voice is nervous, or you're talking quickly, or you just, I'm thinking about the way that when you're talking here to us, when you're trying to figure out where you are, you just take a minute and just figure out where you are and where do I want to be? And, you know, that telegraphs onto your client, who can then be in that similar type of position when addressing questions by a member. You can't buy this stuff.
No, it's just like the field that gets created between you and your dog, right? Uh-huh. The field that you're creating, the field of that, remember those concentric circles. So what's happening to your client in this really stressful situation of a hearing doesn't have to kick them into a trauma response if the circle of support of you, this oasis of care and connection and energy and strength to help them, can make all the difference, right? So there are different things that Sherilyn brought up that can all kind of fit into really helpful stuff around two things, I think, how to create experiences that kind of are, I mentioned it earlier, antidotes or contradict that inner sense of, I'm not okay, I'm not safe, where your client is stuck, right? So the warmth and caring environment, the sense of, can you feel grounding? Can you feel the contact between your feet and the floor, right? Because if you can feel the contact between your feet and the floor and really sense into that, you're clearly not in danger. There's the ground. It's supportive, right? So things, interventions that she mentioned, I meant to have them, I did have them ready right in front of me, but oh yeah, maybe, no, where is that? Things you can do, trauma-informed practices, here it is, to provide antidotes to that sense of, I'm not okay, I'm in danger. So take a minute. There's time. When we're in danger, there's no time. When we're in danger, we can't take a sip of water. We can't feel the feet on the ground. We're too busy with the threat, right? Look around the room. Take the luxury of taking in, I'm in here and now. I'm not in there and then. And what you want to do is kind of introduce, here are some experiences that are available to you that can help potentially bring you into, you can be here with me. It's an okay place to be. And kind of coaxing them, at least temporarily, out of there and there and then, or they're gone. They're completely dissociated, right? So other things that Sherilyn mentioned help people bring presence if they're dissociated. You brought in the beanbag toss, right? If you're physically using your body, you need to be here. You're going to miss the beanbag, right? So that helps people out of dissociation. Cold water helps people out of dissociation. She mentions too, for hypoarousal, taking a break, standing up and walking. There are ways to help people, and people can go back to those slides in the first recording to kind of refresh that ideas about how to help people, how to address their hyperarousal, because they might want to be barreling into their story, but they're actually in the story. They're not with you. Or they're away and unavailable, maybe disorganized, drifting, to help them out of that into enough awakeness and presence that they can engage. So those are really important. So there are other things to do, though. One of them was already talked about, if they're in that dorsal place of giving up and that kind of glassy eyed, deep hypoarousal, this naming that they may be, don't use the word shame, but they may be in a place where they feel like you'll reject them if you write this story, or hyperarousal in the way of, I don't know, you might not be okay, I got to take care of you. I might be harming you. So those are really important messages to convey, to help regulate different states of arousal, whether that's that dorsal state or different species of, hyperarousal and being alarmed for different reasons, right? To name these things. But then this, I'm going to give you more. So ways of, I'm going to read this slowly. There are ways to intentionally stimulate the ventral vagus to regulate the physiological response to the neuroception of danger. Downregulate, right? Here they are. And here's where I wish I had a PowerPoint. Sorry. A few slow, deep breaths from the belly, engaging the diaphragm, where the belly rises, not the chest. An extended exhalation. Nice exhale. Very good. Lovely. An extended exhalation, which is not required at first, but you can invite. And as you're breathing in this way, you might find that your exhalation lengthens. Just let that happen. That's great stuff, right? Even just breathing a sigh. Really vocalizing can exercise the ventral vagus, slowing the heart rate, lowering blood pressure, and optimally bringing the body back into balance. Here's a new one. Holding the breath for a moment and bearing down like you're constipated or giving birth.
Similar.
And then release can also really help. Or putting cool water on your face.
Contrast therapy.
Nice. Yes. Bring the body back. It's kind of like, oh my God, oh my God. And then, oh, that helped have the experience of release. Right. The same principle, I think, operates with progressive muscle relaxation. Uh-huh. You go through all the muscles of the body, hold, and release to have that sense of contrast. and not even being aware of how much you're holding. So why not really triple down on the holding and then triple down on the release that you probably aren't doing?
Mm-hmm.
Holding the tension, right? Mm-hmm. Or that giving up, that collapse state. You know, let's bring some energy in to get the tension going. I haven't been there in a long time, right? A brief, purposeful break in the work environment, whether you're with your client or not, taking breaks, right? Sipping, not gulping, warm or cool beverages, bringing awareness to how it travels down to the stomach, right? So that you're also, well, I'll talk about that in a sec. A short walk with the awareness of the contact between your feet and the ground, warming your hands and placing them on your chest. This, one or two hands over your heart, can be deeply soothing and regulating. It's the vagus nerve where it lives. And if you combine these, breathing as you put your hand on your chest and exhaling, really helpful to bring that vagus response, right? So these are really good things to introduce. There's more. And by the way, so for all of these, the dream, you could maybe call it a pipe dream, depends on how compromised your client is. The dream is that as they move maybe up from a bit of dorsal into more energetic or more relaxed, from sympathetic into ventral, what returns is the ability to communicate. Broca's area can come back on. The ability to problem solve. The ability to think more clearly. Right? So these things can come back online, at least in some measure, which is only going to help. And that's the trajectory. Dorsal, sympathetic, ventral. People who do polyvagal informed therapy say that to really move from dorsal to ventral, they need to go through fight. So I thought about that, and I thought of Sherilyn's slide where she speaks of begin and end with strength. And another thing I thought of was to have your client, you know, ask your client, what are three strengths you have that have helped you get all the way here? To gather, right, a sense of their strengths, you know, from inside or from out. You know, it's the thought of my mom, she just has always loved me so much. Great. Does that give you strength? Great. Can you feel that? Great. So you're kind of gathering their strength. Because I think that's going to help, especially if someone's in dorsal. Mm. Oh, wait, but I'm strong. Wait, hang on.
This goes back to the beginning where you're connecting them to their resiliency rather than what they might perceive as their fragile skull.
Lovely. Perfect. Yeah. Great. And also I thought, if someone's really in a dorsal state, because that's the trickiest one, I've never tried this out, but it's worth trying out, is to communicate, you know what, you've been through so much, and I know there's an impulse to kind of just rest and just like maybe even give up. You get to rest because I'm going to fight. I'm fighting for you. Thing is, I could use your help. What? Help? Yeah. I need you to do the best you can to let me know what it was like. Because that's going to help me fight.
Yeah. I have used this, Deborah, and it's absolutely effective when it's like, you know, I just need you to help me. And I think people coming out of that victim, you know, to be like somebody who can, we talk about empowerment, and I know it's a complicated concept, but when a client feels like they can do something to assist you, it mobilizes something that wasn't necessarily available before.
It's beautiful. It also, it strikes me that it can help with the shame.
Uh-huh.
You, this big deal lawyer, this awesome, smart, capable, you want me to help you? Oh, maybe I'm not a piece of shit, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. It really does work like that. Yeah.
The other thing that I think, I mean, so you can ask them to think that in advance, or you can ask them on the spot, but in advance, to have them bring resources, like on their phone, pictures of things that inspire them, that engender.
Oh, that's a great idea. I love this.
Well, quick on the phone, right? Safeness, you know, the child's face, safeness, security, soothing, strength, a lot of S's to combat all those F's.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Soothing.
Right? That's awesome.
Yeah. And also things that Sherilyn was mentioned, evoking the senses so that to engender a sense of you can be here and now in an immediate way. It's a huge way to help people regulate, right?
Yeah.
This texture. Bring something that you can touch that brings you a sense of soothing or strengthening or
Favorite song. Yeah. Something that makes you feel inspired. Yeah.
Totally. They put that song on, humming. Humming is cool. Hey, put that song on. You know, let's put it on for a couple minutes. We can listen together. You can just listen. Hum along. Humming is amazing for regulation.
Yeah, that's awesome. Right? I love humming.
So have them bring things.
That's such a great idea. I've never done it, and I'm going to change that.
Awesome. Great. Let me just see. Something to the action. Here we go. Music, humming, drum beats, visuals, scent, taste, chocolate. Hello.
I know, exactly.
Hello. Please.
Deborah always has candy in her office too, and sometimes I just need like something ridiculously sweet at that moment. Big sugar hit.
Using lots of energy.
For sure. The calorie burn is real.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And you know, it helps also produce serotonin, which is soothing, right? Mm-hmm. Carbs and sugar, serotonin. We want that bath, serotonin, endogenous opiates, by the way, not the kinds from the outside.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to skip that.
Yeah.
We're doing good. You, the practitioners, can sit on an exercise ball. If you tend to check out, sitting on an exercise ball, it's kind of like the beanbag thing. You're going to fall off unless you stay present, right? Not the client. We don't want them to fall. They don't need. So sitting on a big exercise ball can be a nice way of grounding.
That's awesome.
You're wanting to give them as much that you can provide to get them to that here and now is a good place to be. And it's an alternative to there and then.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important, that juxtaposition. You can be here. Nice.
I want to give you an opportunity. I know we're taking you beyond time already. This work is really hard. It's really rewarding, but it's really hard. And I would say that, like, I mean, we've talked a lot on our program about how little training we get as practitioners and advocates for this type of work. But I think that some people try and do that through like reading about stuff. But like, for me, having counseling support is absolutely vital. There's no replacement for it, because you need to be trained on how to self-care in order to be able to offer self-care to your client in any way. You know, the material that we hear, it all impacts us in different and unique ways, and it can be hugely triggering. And we can't start onboarding these self-care resources in the middle of a traumatic interview. It has to happen in a simple situation. If you can't do it in your day-to-day life, you can't do it in a hearing room. So you have to start and engender that in every element of your life. And so if you're getting triggered and stuff from your own life, invariably will be evoked. If you're not working on that, it's going to overwhelm you. It's inevitable. And that's why people get so burnt out so early. And I get burnt out a lot less now than I did back in the day when I wasn't doing that work. So all of us need a Deborah, and there's only one Deborah, and she's mine. But there's like everybody needs that to be able to talk about it, not just in a collegial kind of way, but in a personal, how does this engage our own feelings about trauma and why?
That's right, because there are two things. One is, how full is your container? If there's unmetabolized trauma, everybody has trauma. Everybody has trauma, and everybody has unmetabolized trauma, likely. So to keep that container, therapy, actual considered work to clear, right?
And I think everybody kind of knows at some level that the pandemic was traumatizing for everybody. And maybe there are exceptions to that, but just as a very clear example that we all experience together, if there's not something that's helping you empty that and create a greater receptacle for adding more material, because it's always coming, more material is always coming. It's not something that happened in the past. Trauma will keep happening. That's one thing we know about life. If you're not actively managing that, then it's just, it's a limited time proposition for sure that we can keep doing that work.
Especially because of the other context, in addition to the full container. So it really wouldn't take much to put a person over the top, is also being triggered. There could be aspects of what your client's talking about that all of a sudden you're not okay. You may not even know why. Right. So that's a good inquiry. Just very briefly, because I have to go again. Sorry.
It's been two hours, Deborah. No shame here.
I know. I'm so used to booking for an hour. This is so challenging. Sorry. Yeah. I've done it.
No, I totally get it. It's hard.
Jesus. So about vicarious traumatization, really, really quickly, the thing that's great is if someone doesn't have significant, you guys, if you don't have significant trauma, which if you do, then it needs to get looked after, but you can prevent yourself from your container getting so full that you end up with a trauma response inside you that is so much like PTSD. It may as well be, it's like, it's traumatization. It is, it's not just like, oh, you know, I feel kind of, it's kind of rough, you know, I feel kind of rough from my work. No, it's actually, now you have a trauma response. And so prevention in all the ways that we've already talked about, self-care, you know, awareness, balance, connection.
Boundaries.
Taking out the garbage, right? Mm-hmm. Connection, sense of getting back down to that optimal ventral vagal state of warmth and safeness that allows for play and creativity. That's what you want to be going for and maintaining and having commitment to as part of your commitment to yourself and also to your good work. So you can prevent compassion fatigue in these same ways, vicarious traumatization. But if you fall into it, then you definitely need help, right? Because you're going to need help to have all the antidotes that to all the states that you're in around distress, right? That kind of jacked up alarm system, that kind of that despair, that sense of meaninglessness, lack of hope, that disconnect and withdrawal. You know, I used to care about taking the dog out, now whatever. You know, these things are all signs of. And you can just quickly, I mean, anybody can Google signs of vicarious traumatization. You know, those are the things to keep, you know, look out for, or if they're around, know that you're going to need help to metabolize and to reconnect with meaning, to reconnect with things that nurture and nourish you. I'm so sorry, that's really short shrift to vicarious traumatization, but it's the idea is prevention.
Yeah.
You guys.
Yeah, and it does harken back to so much of what we've also talked about, because trauma is trauma in some ways, you know, and so the same things that work for the client work for you, both preventatively and curatively. So definitely, I think that you've given us a lot to ponder.
There's one more thing. I mean, there's probably 10 more things. But the one thing that, I thought of something. And I thought of how you've told me that it can be really tough to get the story, you know, to get the material, right? So I thought of the thing that the person is avoiding is being there and then. They're doing that all the time. unconsciously, right? So if you're consciously saying, I need you to be there and then, they might dissociate, they might, right? So one way to hit the middle is to say, okay, now we're together and hopefully have the neuroception of safety and all these resources that they've brought and you've provided, and we know we can breathe and we know we can take a breath. Okay, can you stay here with me? And can you, I don't know, could you put your story on a screen? And can you just tell me what you see? So that they're having the embodied experience of here and now, and they're kind of visiting there and then.
Right.
There's a kind of a buffer. There's a kind of a healthy, very much needed disconnect, so they're not sucked back in and then in their survival responses. Can you put it on a screen, or can you download, can you write it?
Yeah.
You know, download it, record it. Can you just speak into the tape? Just like, eh, you know, we'll just get this out. And but we're here, we're having a cup of tea. And some chocolates. And can you, so I thought that might be helpful.
For sure. I mean, I've never really thought about it in this way, but like, can you tell me what happened to that person and describe it using the third person?
Yes.
You know, when my daughter was a baby, she couldn't say anything negative. So we would play the game of opposites. And so she would say it opposite. Nice. You know, I loved that so much. Okay, that means that she really hated that. And I thought that that was so comforting, meaning that was terrifying, you know? And I mean, again, this is too complicated the way that I'm setting it out, but realize, like, just giving your client another alternative for how they can take it outside of themselves just for a moment, just to give us the information that we need. Nice. I love that.
See yourself on the screen, and you can talk about that person.
Yeah, like you're telling me about what happened in a documentary.
Totally. There's a client that I had a while back. We got a doll for her, and she didn't have to use any words. She could show me what happened to the doll. What happened to her, you know, this doll. And she showed me what she could never say.
Yeah.
You know? So hopefully that's helpful.
So much. I feel like we could do 10 more hours of this, but this has been super helpful. And I think you've given a lot of great tools for people to know about.
Great. Such a pleasure.
Always. Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.